Engaging presentations on the most urgent problem of our day and what you can do about it.
Now, the End Abortion Podcast by Priests for Life.
News. Today is Friday, June 2nd. I'm Leslie Palma.
And I'm Teresa Watson. We're so happy you've joined us tonight. In our top story, we'll talk about the horrific attack on two elderly pro-lifers outside of Baltimore Planned Parenthood.
Oklahoma's state Supreme Court ruled that two laws restricting abortion are unconstitutional. I will report on this and everything you need to know this week in Abortion in the News.
Ron DeSantis announced he is running for president. I will discuss this and much more in Political News in a Nutshell.
We will close the show with a very special interview with Emily Berning, whose organization Let Them Live provides assistance to moms so they don't have to choose between paying bills and their babies' lives.
80-year-old Dick Schaefer was back at his post outside a Baltimore Planned Parenthood this week as police continued to search for a man who viciously attacked him and fellow pro-lifer Mark Crosby last Friday. Incredibly, the 73-year-old Mr. Crosby also was back at his post on Wednesday after being seriously injured and hospitalized for several days at the University of Maryland's Shock Trauma Center. We spoke to Mr. Schaefer by phone earlier today, but unfortunately we had technical difficulties, so cannot play that interview for you. But he told us everything he remembers about the incident.
Mr. Schaefer is at his post outside Planned Parenthood on North Howard Street in Baltimore from 9 to 11 a.m. every Monday through Friday. Last week, he and a man on the sidewalk got into a conversation that witnesses later described to police as visibly aggressive. When he realized he wasn't going to change the man's mind about abortion, Mr. Schaefer left the conversation and returned to his post right outside the door of the facility. The next thing he knew, he was on the ground looking at the blue sky, and police and two ambulances were on the scene. Witnesses said the assailant knocked him over a flower pot, apparently he lost consciousness. Mr. Schaefer told us his first thought when he came to was that he had been hit by one of the light rail vehicles on Howard Street. "I never saw the guy who hit me," he told us. Witnesses said he was out cold for several minutes.
Mr. Schaefer said he didn't feel any pain at first, but noticed he was covered with dirt and then realized his hand was bleeding. He looked for Mr. Crosby but couldn't see him, finding him a few minutes later at a pregnancy resource center next door being treated for his wounds. "I could hardly recognize him," Mr. Schaefer told us. "He was all bloody and his face on the right side was all lumpy and distorted." Mr. Schaefer doesn't remember this, but witnesses said Mr. Crosby rushed to his aid. The assailant then lunged at Mr. Crosby, knocking him to the ground. The man punched Mr. Crosby in the face with a closed fist as he lay on the sidewalk, and then kicked him in the face with extreme force. A witness told a news crew that he believes Mr. Crosby saved Mr. Schaefer's life.
Mr. Crosby was taken by ambulance to the hospital, and Mr. Schaefer was treated on the scene for cuts on his hand. On his way to Mass later in the day, he realized his shoulder hurt and went instead to an urgent care clinic. Mr. Crosby was admitted to shock trauma for his serious injuries and was released earlier this week.
Police are still looking for the attacker. A GoFundMe account set up to help Mr. Crosby with medical expenses has raised more than $40,000. Mr. Schaefer expects to be back at his post outside Planned Parenthood on Monday.
Oklahoma was the first state in the nation to protect most babies from abortion after last year's Supreme Court decision overturning Roe v. Wade. On Wednesday, the state Supreme Court ruled that two laws restricting abortion are unconstitutional, but babies still remain protected from abortion in most cases. In a 6-3 decision, the court ruled that the state's heartbeat law and a second law banning abortion at conception run afoul of a previous Supreme Court ruling that a woman has an inherent right to abortion if a pregnancy jeopardizes her life. Governor Kevin Stitt, who signed both laws in 2022, said he disagrees with the court's, quote, use of activism to create a right to abortion in Oklahoma. In a statement to the Tulsa World, Stitt said, "This court has once more over-involved itself in the state's democratic process and has interceded to undo legislation created by the will of the people." The 1910 trigger law, enacted after the Dobbs decision nearly a year ago, remains in effect. That law makes it a crime to perform abortions. Indiana abortionist Caitlin Bernard was fined $3,000 and reprimanded by the state's licensing board after rushing to the media in July to talk about the abortion she performed on a 10-year-old rape victim from Ohio. Bernard told the media the girl was unable to have the procedure in her home state because a heartbeat act was in effect. Bernard's comments went viral, with President Biden even discussing the case during a televised speech. 2 weeks after the Indianapolis Star first reported the story, a reporter with a video camera showed up at the 10-year-old's home. Indiana Attorney General Todd Rokita initiated the investigation into Bernard, an abortion advocate frequently quoted in the pro-abortion media. Rokita's office issued a statement saying, when Bernard talked about the high priority she puts on legislation and speaking to the public, she did so at the expense of her own patient. This shows where her priorities are as an activist rather than a doctor. 24 hours after South Carolina Governor Henry McMaster signed a heartbeat law that took months to pass, a judge last Friday blocked the law until the state Supreme Court can hear a challenge brought by Planned Parenthood. Abortion again remains legal until 20 weeks. Nevada Governor Joe Lombardo on Tuesday signed a bill barring state agencies from cooperating with authorities seeking to prosecute women who travel to Nevada for abortion from states where the procedure is banned. The first-term Republican governor describes himself as pro-life, but nonetheless signed the bill that seeks to make the state a haven for abortion seekers. The face of abortionist from Ann Arbor, Michigan, appears on a billboard outside Orlando International Airport in Florida, urging visitors to turn around and head to his state because abortion is available without limits there. Ron DeSantis is attacking your reproductive rights. Head to Michigan for patient doctor medical decision, the billboard reads, alongside a picture of abortionist Tim Johnson. Florida's governor in April signed a heartbeat law that would protect babies from abortion at about 6 weeks. The law is on hold while the state awaits a ruling on the constitutionality of its current 15-week law. The Life Legal Defense Fund this week filed a petition with the U.S. Supreme Court asking it to reverse a multimillion-dollar judgment against pro-life activists and the Center for Medical Progress. In 2016, Planned Parenthood sued the center and several individuals after a series of videos was released showing abortionists negotiating the sale of baby body parts. After a six-week trial, a federal court in San Francisco awarded the nation's largest abortion seller more than $2 million in damages and $14 million in attorney fees, a decision later affirmed by the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals. Operation Rescue President Troy Newman is among those named in the judgment, along with Center for Medical Progress founder David DeLeiden and his associate Sandra Merritt, as well as longtime California pro-life activist Alban Romberg. With the one-year anniversary of the Supreme Court decision overturning Roe v. Wade just weeks away, Planned Parenthood has announced it will lay off 10 to 15% of its national workforce. About 100 employees could be out of work come July 1st. The abortion giant says it is not facing financial difficulties, but wants to concentrate more on its state affiliates. And that's abortion in the news.
Ron DeSantis officially kicked off his 2024 presidential campaign Tuesday in Iowa. While speaking to reporters after the event at an evangelical church outside Des Moines, the Florida governor leveled a series of shots at his rival, former President Donald Trump, painting him as selfish, unprincipled, and petty. As the opening contest in the GOP nominating fight, Iowa holds a unique role in sizing up the presidential field. That's especially important this election season, since it's the first time in over a century a former president is seeking to return to the White House. Here is DeSantis' campaign video.
Our border is a disaster. Crime infests our cities. The federal government makes it harder for families to make ends meet. And the president flounders. But decline is a choice, success is attainable, and freedom is worth fighting for. Righting the ship requires restoring sanity to our society, normalcy to our communities, and integrity to our institutions. Truth must be our foundation, and common sense can no longer be an uncommon virtue. In Florida, we proved that it can be done. We chose facts over fear, education over indoctrination, law and order over rioting and disorder. We held the line when freedom hung in the balance. We showed that we can and must revitalize America. We need the courage to lead and the strength to win. I'm Ron DeSantis, and I'm running for president to lead our great American comeback.
Republican Representative Chris Stewart of Utah announced Wednesday that he planned to resign from Congress, citing his wife's health. "My wife and I have made so many dear friends and memories throughout our journey," Stewart said in a statement from his office. I can say with pride that I have been an effective leader for my beloved home state, and I'm honored to have played an important role in guiding our nation through some troubled times. But my wife's health concerns have made it necessary that I retire from Congress after an orderly transition can be ensured. Stewart's statement did not specify when he would leave. His resignation will leave open a Republican seat on the House Appropriations and Intelligence Committees and reduce an already narrow GOP majority to just 4 seats. A Republican candidate is heavily favored to fill the vacancy. Stewart represents Utah's 2nd Congressional District, a reliably GOP constituency in western Utah. The governor will call for a special election and primary to fill the vacant seat. However, until a special election happens, House Speaker Kevin McCarthy, Republican from California, will have even less room for error when whipping votes. Assuming united Democratic opposition, McCarthy can only afford to lose 3 Republican votes on any given legislation. Stewart's retirement would also reshape Utah politics, as he was widely believed to be considered a run for the U.S. Senate seat currently held by Republican Mitt Romney, or to take a shot at running for governor. His wife's illness has put a hold on these plans, creating opportunities for other ambitious Republicans. The Texas House of Representatives has voted to impeach Attorney General Ken Paxton, an unprecedented move following a legislative probe that faulted the third-term Republican for a years-long pattern of corruption. The House voted 121-23 to suspend the Attorney General and refer him to the Senate for trial on charges of bribery, abuse of office, and obstruction. It was the first such impeachment since 1975. The pro-life Paxton has had to step down pending the outcome of a trial this summer in the state Senate. Texas Governor Greg Abbott on Wednesday appointed former Secretary of State John Scott to serve temporarily as Attorney General. Former New Jersey Governor Chris Christie has added his name to the list of Republicans hoping for a seat in the Oval Office. Former Vice President Mike Pence and North Dakota Governor Doug Burgum also are expected to announce their candidacies in the coming days. The Wall Street Journal expects a crowded field to benefit former President Trump, with a large field splintering the vote. At least 9 Republicans have now signaled their intentions to run. And that's political news in a nutshell.
No mom should have to choose between paying her bills and her unborn baby's life. Those are the words prominently displayed on the Let Them Live website. We have with us tonight Emily Berning, the president and co-founder of Let Them Live. Welcome to the show, Emily.
Thank you so much for having me.
Emily, thank you again for joining us. But tell us a little bit, what is the mission of Let Them Live?
Yeah, well, we started Let Them Live, my husband and I did, because we found out that 73% of women in the United States have abortions because of financial burden. So our mission is to raise the funds that are needed to help support women and help them to choose life and cancel their abortions.
So what types of support do you provide to these moms?
Yeah, so we have the financial support, and our most common financial support that we do is like rent. And that could be, we also do like utility bills, car payments, groceries, like you name it. We also have a lot of emotional support. We provide not only financial counseling, but we also provide life coaching and pregnancy counseling, support groups. So when we first started Let Them Live, it was very much just financial, because it was just my husband and I that were running the organization. But now we have a lot more people, so it's much more well-rounded.
Well, that's incredible. But Emily, I was reading some of your new book, Let Them Live, How Saving One Life from Abortion Sparked a Movement. And I love the story about how you got started and how your mother-in-law's reaction to Nathan's generosity. Could you please share that story with us?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I always like to start with a little joke. Nathan's heart is bigger than his brain. he is the just has the biggest heart. And this is something I learned right off the bat when he and I first started dating. And this is something his mom has known his entire life. Nathan's just the type of person to kind of if he just feels like it's right, he's just going to do it. And then he'll figure everything else out later. So I remember we were just married. We were in Michigan. It was a Christmas party. And I was asleep. Nathan's a night owl. So it's like 3 a.m. and he's on Facebook and he sees this woman commenting that her cousin had an abortion scheduled. And so he messages her and asks, well, why does she have an abortion scheduled? Because if we can get to the reason a woman goes into Planned Parenthood or into that abortion clinic, we could actually find a solution. So it turns out her cousin did have an abortion scheduled. She was evicted, living in her car in freezing temperatures. She lost her job. I mean, everything was just kind of coming down on her. And she really felt backed into a corner and felt like she had no other option. So after communicating back and forth, Nathan's bright idea is, well, what if we just gave you everything we have, which was about $1,200, and get you back into your apartment? Would you choose life? And again, after some back and forth, it was, yeah, okay, I'll do it. If this is real, yeah, I'll cancel my abortion if I can get some help. So Nathan nudges me awake and he's like, hey, do you want to save a life from abortion? And I'm like, yeah, of course. And he's like, well, we have to get rid of all of our money in our bank account. And I'm like, okay, you know, whatever it takes. And so we paid for her like past due rent. We got her back in her apartment and she canceled her abortion and sent us an ultrasound. And I remember Nathan's mom just thinking, this is just absolutely nuts. You know, these kids, like, what are they doing? But true to form, this is just such a Nathan thing to do. And then that's when we started doing more research because we figured there were other women that were experiencing something similar and we no longer had any money. So we needed to try to branch out and see if there were other people that would be willing to donate to this cause. And some bumps along the way, but his mom, you know, very loving. I love my mother-in-law. She can tend to be a little cautious at times, but always supportive the whole way.
Well, that's fantastic. So I think when I met your colleague at NRB last week, I think she said you've saved 600 babies since 2019.
Yeah, that was as of March. So I know we're well above that, but we did hit our 600th baby saved, which was a huge accomplishment.
And so why, tell us why an organization like yours is so important in our post-Roe nation.
Yeah, this is such a good question because there was actually a situation last year when Roe was overturned. I had a donor email me and he said, okay, well, now that abortion's not going to exist anymore, what is Let Them Live going to do? What's your new mission going to be? And it kind of scared me a little bit that this was the thought process of pro-life people. Well, Roe was overturned, abortion no longer will ever exist, and resources aren't needed for women. And it's exactly the opposite. When Roe was overturned, we saw even more of a need for resources for women, direct support to women. It was a legal accomplishment for sure. But in that, you know, direct support to women, we have to keep going because there are organizations that are doing kind of what Let Them Live does, but they're raising money to pay for and fund abortions and travel for abortions. We see companies that are covering costs for abortions. Planned Parenthood has like mobile vans that they have sitting on the borders of different states, ready to transport women across state lines. The abortion pill is more available than ever, more accessible than ever. And so we've really had to increase our efforts. So an organization like Let Them Live that is providing a much needed type of support to women is just paramount in a post-Roe world where women are traveling for abortions, they're seeking out abortions in other ways, and it's still because of that financial burden. And, you know, we probably won't know for a few more years. We're waiting on some more updated studies and statistics about how many women are getting abortions because of financial reasons. But it's absolutely important because abortion is still accessible, sadly, and in many states as well, like California, New York, we see a lot of access to abortion, and it's continuing to be pushed. So we got to keep it up. Pro-life movement has got to keep it up.
Definitely.
Yeah, we agree. But Emily, thank you so much for joining us tonight. But before we say goodbye, could you please tell our viewers how they can get involved and support you and where they can go for more information about Let Them Live?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, the biggest thing is donations. The more money that we can raise, the more moms we can help and the more lives we can save from abortion. So going to our website, letthemlive.org, we have a current fundraiser. We have a fundraiser that we're running right now for a mom who is considering taking abortion pills. So you can donate to her. You can donate to different moms. You can become a monthly donor. We also have a lot of volunteer opportunities and internships. We are a virtual organization, so you can volunteer or work for Let Them Live from the comfort of your own home. So it's a really great way to get involved. You can also find us on social media, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, TikTok, YouTube, all that stuff. We're on there. You just type in Let Them Live and we'll pop up.
All right. Well, thank you so much and good luck with all of your projects.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, Emily. Good night.
Good night.
Good night.
Thank you so much for joining us on Pro-Life Primetime News, produced at Priest for Life headquarters in Titusville, Florida. We hope you will tune in every Friday at 9 p.m. Eastern Time.
We hope you will support this show and all of our broadcasts by making a donation to prolifegift.org. These donations help fund all of our work here at Priest for Life, which enables us to continue educating, equipping, and activating God's people to end abortion. I'm Teresa Watson, Executive Manager.
I'm Leslie Palma, Communications Director. Remember, life is the only choice.
This has been the End Abortion Podcast. To learn more, to help end abortion, and to connect with us on social media, visit endabortion.net.